This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, if you're listening to this, I will assume you're at least interested in money, understanding the economy and finances as well. And some of us now want to get the next generation interested as well. So check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. Tune into Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Get 1 month free and an extra $10 when you sign up for a Greenlight account at greenlight.com/million. Once and for all, people. Once and for all.
I think you can say that there's little basis for thinking that the economy is in a recession now.
From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Wednesday today, December the 13th. Good, as it always is, to have you along, everybody. All right, imagine you are Jay Powell. And somebody, maybe a reporter at a press conference after, and I'm just hypothesizing here, after a two-day meeting where you decided to keep interest rates where they are, somebody says to you, hey, Chair Powell, inflation's falling a lot and the economy's growing. When are you going to start thinking about cutting interest rates? You take a deep breath and you begin.
So the way we're looking at it is really this.
Go on.
When we started out, right, we said the first question is how fast to move.
Right. We remember.
And we moved very fast.
Yes. Yes, you did.
The second question is how high to raise the policy rate. And that's really the question that we're still on here.
Wait, still?
I would just say this.
What?
We are seeing, strong growth that appears to be moderating.
Yes, 5.2% in the third quarter, slowing into the end of the year.
We're seeing a labor market that is coming back into balance by so many measures.
Yeah, we talk about that a lot. Slowing job gains, fewer openings.
And we're seeing inflation making real progress.
Yeah. So to sum it all up,
these are the things we've been wanting to see.
And that, dear listener, gets us back to the question du jour.
But of course, the question of when will it become appropriate to begin dialing back the amount of policy restraint in place, that begins to come into view and is clearly a topic of discussion out in the world and also a discussion for us at our meeting today.
So they're talking about it. That was all in Powell's second answer at his press conference today, by the way. He went another 40-ish minutes. We gave you the highlights. Wall Street Today, tell you what, traders do love them some Jay Powell right now. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. It being December, this was the last Fed meeting of the year. It's also, as it happens, that time on the calendar when all those dictionaries come out with their words of the year. The Oxford English Dictionary, I'm sure you've heard this, went with Riz, which, okay, I guess. Dictionary.com had hallucinate. Hello, ChatGPT. Merriam-Webster chose authentic, another nod to AI. But what if the Fed had a word of the year for 2023? That one utterance that sums up the big themes in monetary policy this year. What would it be? What should it be? Marketplace's Matt Levin made some calls.
If we went back to last January, the likely contender for Fed Word of the Year was probably pain. Inflation was over 6%, the Fed was still raising rates fast and furiously, and pretty much every forecaster you talked to was some cross of Debbie Downer and Paul Revere. A recession is coming, a recession is coming. So, for economist Skanda Armanath at Employ America,
my 2023 Word of the Year for the Fed is fortunate.
Fortunate, a.k.a. a little lucky.
Jay Powell was saying there will be pain. There's going to be pain. We've got to see slower growth. We've got to see some higher unemployment. We didn't get any of that stuff, but we did get the lower inflation.
Not to diminish the Fed, but it really helped that consumers still had leftover pandemic savings, that the Silicon Valley Bank fiasco wasn't worse, that energy prices really didn't go haywire. Olu Sinola at Fitch Ratings agrees a lot of luck was involved, but he has a different word Jay Powell would probably prefer.
Persistence. They have been very, very persistent with their messaging. They want to get inflation back down to 2%.
Sinola says, unfortunately, you could also still call inflation a bit persistent. We're not at that 2% target yet. That very tricky last mile will have to wait for next year. I asked Julie Smith at Lafayette College for her best guess for the Fed's 2024 Word of the Year.
Thinking about 2024, the word that comes to mind about the Fed and monetary policy is normalization. We are going to have to move policy back to a more normal level, moving from this restrictive monetary policy that we have right now.
Today, the Fed suggested they'll start to move in that direction. As for my 2024 word of the year, halvesies. As in, hey, you want to go halvesies when we eat out? It's still pretty expensive. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
Here's another word. Not certainly of this year, several years past, but what have you. Anyway, it's podcast. We've got one. If you missed something on the radio, marketplace.org or the platform of your choice, of course. A week or so ago, I went over to the Los Angeles Clean Tech Incubator. It's LACI for short. It's one of those organizations that gives startups space and resources to get their companies off the ground.
Are you here for a meeting, or do you have you need to charge?
I don't actually need to charge because I'm not driving an EV, because my EV is broken, but that's a whole different thing.
Okay, well, in that case, just do me a favor. Just go around the parking and park it at any space.
Thank you very
available.
Much.
Just
park I did after driving past about 30 electric vehicle charging stations on my way in. Outside Lacey's front door, I met Yvette Ellis. Hi.
Hi.
I'm Kai. Nice to see you.
I'm Yvette.
Thanks for taking the time this morning.
Yeah.
She's the co-founder and chief people officer for a company called Charger Help, which got its start here at LACI about 4 years ago.
Well, that's where I met Camille.
Camille, your co-founder.
Correct. Camille C. Terry, the brilliant Camille C. Terry.
She's sick today, by the way, we should say. Otherwise,
yes,
she'd have been here.
Yes, she was bummed.
Yvette was doing workforce development at LACI when they met, and Camille Terry was working for a tech company that made software for charging stations like the ones we're standing in front of.
She was in charge of customer support. And so she would get all the angry calls from all of the drivers.
Reliability at charging stations is a big problem. Trust me, I'm an EV owner. Researchers at UC Berkeley found that more than a quarter of the public charging stations they tested didn't work. Imagine just for a second, if you can, if one out of every four gas pumps you pulled up at was out of service. That's the problem that Camille Terry wants to solve.
She quit her job. And she started Charger Help.
And here we are almost 4 years later, and you guys are a going concern now.
Yeah, we're a thing.
So look, the problem is that business for you guys is probably really good because the charging infrastructure in this country is still a mess.
The charging infrastructure,
right?
Still needs a lot of improvement. I tell people all the time, like, this is the beginning of a new era. The first transition in transportation since maybe the horse and buggy, since we got to a gas car. However, it will take companies like Charger Help for this to work. The operations and maintenance has to be taken care of.
The Biden administration figures that between public and private investment, nearly $24 billion has been committed to public charging infrastructure through 2030, which means you are going to see more and more charging stations in more and more parking lots around town.
Our customer is whoever is in charge of the health of the charging machine. So it could be your network provider. Mm-hmm. It could be your utility.
It's so funny. You say network provider and everybody thinks like telephones and cell phones and all this jazz. But when you say network provider, you mean
the
electrical
software.
Charger network stuff.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And speaking of cell phones, for those who just get lost really fast like me, I had to learn a lot of different analogies to get it, right? If you don't come from this industry. So it's like when you have a cell phone, you have your T-Mobiles, your Sprints, right? Those will be networks, right? And you can pick those. But then you have your hardware, which is like your Apple and your Samsung and, you know, that create the actual phone that you're using, right? There's less of those, right? So you might have more networks than you do hardware providers. So our customer is the network provider, the different software that's out there, the utilities. Sometimes it's more a site host, right? The store owner, the hospital that has
this place, right? There's a bunch of chargers right out here.
We service these as well.
Right.
That is who our customer is. So not necessarily the driver directly.
Got it. Charger Help offers reliability as a service. That's their pitch, where companies pay $40 to $100 a month, depending on the service plan, for access to trained technicians that can come out and fix chargers when they go down. They've got 24 technicians on staff, and they say they've trained about 1,000 of them through their workforce development programs.
We kind of call ourselves the geek squad, right? You know, you buy this computer, it's great for a year, and then something happens. And where you do, you take your computer to a geek squad or a store where there's somebody there that can help you with the things that are a bit past what you know.
Okay. All these technicians.
Yes.
Where do they come from?
So at one point, it was just electricians that could do it. But now we know that we would need an additional workforce.
Mm-hmm.
To be able to maintain it, because the issues that were popping up were more software issues, right? It wasn't putting electricity in the ground. It wasn't that. It's software. It will break.
Do we have enough of those people?
Not today. Not today. But I will tell you, like, this country has upped the ante when it comes to, like, preparing this workforce. It is a national focus at this point.
Which gets me to the infrastructure bill and the IRA and all of that. There's tons of money coming into this sector of this economy.
Absolutely.
Does that make you feel better?
Yeah. Money is always good, right?
Well, yeah, but that was sort of a qualified,
No, yes. Of course, we have to be very careful about, you know, we have to, it's a lot of money coming down, right? So you have to be careful to make sure that it's not just a money grab, that the folks that are getting the money actually have the solutions, actually have the plans to really do the work that needs to be done.
So there are people in here who are going to be coming in with all this money because they want to do green tech work and clean the environment and all of that. And then there are people coming in who want to make a buck.
Look, I'm both of those people. Okay, so no knock to the folks that see this as an opportunity, because it is a wealth opportunity. Let's not play like any businesses won't be created and wealth won't be generated. It absolutely will. My thing is, what you're putting in the market on the table, is it helpful and can it move us forward?
As you try to get the workforce that you need, right?
Yeah.
Are places like Lacey It, do you need the incubators, or is it going to be a community college thing? I mean, how are you going to get those people?
All hands on deck. We have worked with community colleges, because look, it's not the same pathway, especially if you bring in the buzzword everybody loves of equity. Equity has to work several different ways, because we are all on different playing fields, right? The goal is to give everybody access and the opportunity to be able to compete for some of these jobs, right? So if the Workforce Development Center is a route, okay. If the community college is a route, okay. We know it's privilege to be able to do a 2-year or 4-year program. That's a privilege in the U.S. Some folks will need a 3-month program, right? That is the goal. But right now, it's enough opportunity for us to use all of our pathways to get people started. For instance, a lot of our initial technicians came from gas and oil, came from closing factories, came from field service jobs like UPS and FedEx, because they understand what it is to drive around all day and know the lay of the land. That is a big part of this job.
Are you worried about time to scale? And the reason I ask is we had a big bump last summer-ish in EVs, mm-hmm. and everybody was like, oh, EV. You know, when I bought my EV, I paid a premium because mm-hmm. it was all, let's do EVs. And now the prices are getting softer. And big car makers, I'm sure you saw the news about GM and all the rest of them, are pulling back a little bit. You worried?
I'm not worried. I think when we're talking about something as huge as mass EV adoption and the amount of money that has to move around for this to happen, mm-hmm. we have to be prepared for the ebbs and the flows that come with it.
Yvette, thanks. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
The Biden administration, as you might have heard, has set a goal of getting 500,000 EV chargers online before 2030. That is three times as many as are out there right now. Coming up.
The recipes I'm really not going to share with anyone ever.
Call them trade secrets, right? First, though, let's do the numbers. Yeah, the really happy music for the first time in a while. The Dow Industrials added 512 points, 1.4%, 37,090. The NASDAQ gained 200 points, also 1.4%, by the way, 14,733. The S&P 500 rose 63 points. Do the math. 1.4%, 4707. There, software giant Adobe is due to report its fourth quarter earnings after the bell. Today, analysts expect the Firefly, the company's generative AI product, could be a significant growth driver. Adobe down 1.5%. Alphabet, Google's parent company, essentially flat. IBM dropped about 0.2%. Oracle increased 0.2%. Bond prices went up. The yield on the 10-year T-note, 4.02%. You tell me what the bond market thinks is going to happen with the Fed. Hmm? You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns. Meaning, when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. For the first time in 30 years, as you might have heard, there was a global agreement at the UN climate conference that wrapped up today that we, as in the whole planet, should transition, quote, away from fossil fuels in energy systems in a just, orderly, and equitable manner. Nothing's binding here, but these conferences have been going on for a very long time now, and this one is the first to say we need to move away from fossil fuels to limit global warming. That is already happening. to some extent in the United States. The Energy Department said this week it expects renewables, mostly solar and wind, to overtake coal in the American energy mix next year for the first time. And as Marketplace's Henry App reports, that's got a whole lot more to do with market forces than with government policy.
Coal used to be all reliable. Sonia Carley at the University of Pennsylvania says it was
a very steady, efficient, predictable form of energy.
But it also emits a lot of greenhouse gases, and that's led to some stricter environmental regulations, with more likely to come. And since a coal plant usually lasts for 40 or more years,
it doesn't really make sense at this point to build more coal facilities.
So right now in the U.S., we're not, and many plants are closing. But there are bigger factors leading to coal's decline that have less to do with government actions, says Steve Sakala at Tufts University.
It's the combination of installing more renewable generation capacity and the price of natural gas being lower so that gas gets called on to operate before coal does.
Essentially, renewables and natural gas are now cheaper than coal.
One of the extraordinary things about the energy transition in the U.S. is this has largely happened without a coherent national energy policy.
Seth Feaster is with the Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis. He says it's mostly the market that's making choices about the future of energy.
Utilities, and particularly independent power producers, are very sensitive to the economics in the energy markets. And that has a very big impact on what's driving all of this.
Driving more money and investment to wind and solar. And that's prompted a big change in how renewables are viewed in the energy sector, says Steve Sakala at Tufts.
It used to be that you had fossil fuel incumbents fighting an idea, and now they're fighting an industry.
And there's a chance that industry, renewables, eventually wins the fight. I'm Henry Epp for Marketplace.
If you want to get into the nitty-gritty of the Consumer Price Index that came out yesterday, which, of course, we do, then let's direct our attention, shall we, to the table listing consumer expenditures, which expenses increased or decreased from the month before. Bottom page 9, table 1, we see motor vehicle insurance was up in November, up a lot to 19.2% from a year ago. That's insurance for passenger cars, trucks, and vans. And as Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes reports, the increase is about everything from weather to the cost of replacing a bumper these days.
There are a bunch of reasons insurance prices have gone up. One is that during the pandemic, drivers got used to going fast. Back then, there were fewer cars on the road, and that habit stuck.
Now they're driving faster, and there's more cars on the road.
Jeff Reeder leads the insurance consultancy Ward Benchmarking. He says with cars going higher speed, accidents now tend to be more severe. That means the car damage is worse and the lawsuits are bigger. Another reason insurance is pricier, crazy weather.
Throughout the Midwest, there has been more frequent hailstorms.
Hail can damage a windshield, windows, create dents.
And in many cases, what that does is it ends up that the vehicle is totaled because the cost to repair the vehicle will be more than it will be to replace it.
And who's in the cars when they're on the road also matters. The American population is now older. And when an elderly person is in an accident,
their medical bills are going to be higher because their bodies are, they're not youthful, and it takes time longer to recover and more complications.
Rob Olson is with the International Risk Management Institute, which provides research to the insurance industry. And he says even if a car is only involved in a fender bender, that costs more these days too, because our fenders have gotten fancier.
You have maybe a smart bumper, you know, you have cameras on in the windshield when you have an accident. You have to replace that high-tech equipment. It's much, much more expensive.
All this has resulted in sticker shock for consumers looking at their insurance premiums. Curtis Chambers is a financial counselor just outside Boston. He says faced with higher costs, some people are considering alternatives to cars.
I have a client that I was talking to this week that was thinking of going from two cars to one, you know, and maybe using motorized bikes or scooters and things of that nature.
He says other people are looking into working from home more often so they can tell their insurers, hey, we're not driving as much, and maybe negotiate a lower price. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
Yes, retail is a consumer economy buzzword this time of year. Also big, though, baking. So we decided it was time to call Rita Magaldi. She owns Sheer Ambrosia. That's a baklava bakery in Draper, Utah. And when last we heard, baklava was in its summer slowdown. And after years of baking out of her home, Rita was putting in a lot of time opening up a commercial kitchen.
When cool weather comes in, people start thinking about baklava. So Thanksgiving was amazing. So many people bought baklava. I don't do a lot of advertising, I'll be honest, because I'm afraid that I won't be able to handle all of the baking since I'm currently still working from home. So once I get in the commercial kitchen, then it'll be a whole different world. The new space was supposed to be ready on October 1st. That didn't happen, and it's very disappointing. Now we're too deep into the holiday season to try to move in. I just need to take care of Christmas here in my cottage kitchen. And then once the dust has settled from Christmas, then we can hopefully get moved to the new space and start enjoying that space. And, you know, 600 square feet doesn't sound big, but compared to a home kitchen, it's plenty big for what we need right now. And I'm so excited. Absolutely. When we get into the new space, I'm going to be looking for a couple people to help me. The recipes, I'm really not going to share with anyone ever. It's going to be like the Coke recipe where nobody knows it. But I eventually want to have people that will help me assemble the baklava because I put 45 layers of phyllo dough in every batch. It just takes a long time to layer it. And so having someone help me do that will help free up my time to go out and source more business for the company. Right now, I'm essentially baking one pan at a time. So my oven is on 24/7. And in the new space, I'll be able to bake 10 at a time. So it's going to be night and day as far as being able to take care of my customers. And also maybe get a couple of hours of sleep in there too.
Forty-five layers of phyllo dough. Holy cow. Rita Magaldi there in her last holiday season baking baklava at her cottage kitchen for her business Sheer Ambrosia. It's in Draper, Utah. All right, we got to go. This final note, though, on the way out today, riffing just a bit on the premise of Henry Epps' spot a minute ago that it is tough to fight market forces. Here's the flip side, a case where one imagines market forces will have a distinct point of view. The news comes out of the snack and beverage giant Pepsi, its chip subdivision Doritos, via Copenhagen, Denmark. I am not making this up. The Danish distillery Empirical is out today with a Doritos nacho cheese flavored spirit. That's all I got. It's actually happening. Our media production team includes Brian Allison, Jake Cherry, Jessen Dueler, Drew Jostad, Gary O'Keefe, Jeff Peters, Charlton Thorpe, Juan Carlos Torrado, and Becca Weinman. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.